One thing that I just thought was interesting is, like you said Rachel's the money manager and she wants to take that on, but you're here still talking about what you do. Because so often I think people can say, oh, my husband takes care of the money and I don't worry about it. Or my wife takes care of it, I don't worry about it. But yeah, it's important you still know. And I guess that leads perfectly to my next question, is how important do you think it is for you guys to talk about money?
Oh, it's super important.
Welcome to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming, where you learn what you weren't taught in school. Let's get talking. Welcome to today's episode of Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. In today's episode, we're having a great money talk with Luke Enzine. He is an educator, not necessarily a financial expert, which is leading us directly into those conversations I want to have with normal, everyday people about their money. We have a really insightful conversation about growing up with money, managing money in a relationship and in a marriage, and how, frankly, Luke says he doesn't know how it's possible to not talk about money in a marriage. Money touches so many different pieces of our lives, and this interview is going to be very insightful to help you get an understanding of how a regular, everyday person handles their money and does well with it. Get ready to explore the impact of childhood views on money, navigating financial conversations in a marriage, and the importance of maintaining a robust emergency fund, and much, much more. Let's dive right into this enriching discussion on Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. But first, the money talking points for today's episode are: how did your childhood experiences with money influence how you handle it now? And two, do you have an emergency fund? And number three, why do you think it is important to talk about money? With the money talking points in mind, let's get right into today's episode. Hello, welcome to today's interview on Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. I'm here with Luke Enzine, and I'm really excited for this conversation. I asked Luke about a week or two ago, I said, hey, would you come on my podcast? And here we are. He didn't really have any sort of financial background per se. He's in education. So I'm excited for this conversation for us to talk about money. Luke, would you introduce yourself a little bit?
Yeah. So like he said, I'm Luke Enzine. Skylar and I have known each other for a year and a half now, here in the good old town of Sunset, Utah. It is a real place. And like he said, I'm in education. I used to be a teacher and now I'm an assistant principal and live in Utah.
Yeah. And Luke and I had conversations about money here and there, and we've talked about it. We've shared ideas. So I said, hey, let's talk about it on the podcast and kind of nail down some of your ideas and have a conversation about it. So we'll jump right into it with this first question of how, when you were growing up, how did your view on money impact your view on money now? So your, how did your parents handle money? How did that influence your lifestyle with money?
I would say it is rather unknown of how my parents handled money. They didn't really talk about money a whole lot. The information that I was given from my parents was you should save every penny. Mm-hmm. And it was a bit of a scarcity mindset of don't spend it unless you have to. And that probably came from a couple bouts of unemployment that my dad had. So it's this cycle of I'm employed, have a pretty reasonable salary job, I'm feeding six kids, I'm unemployed now. Mm. I need to work several jobs to even put food on the table. So that impacted me now, because up until I got married, I kind of treated money the same way. Mm. Is I shouldn't ever spend money on anything. And if I do, I kind of felt yeah, bad when I would do it. But that's changed a bit now with me and my wife as we've grown in that conversation.
Did your parents ever talk to you about money, or was it just something in the background?
Something in the background.
Yeah, I think that's often a lot of people's situation. Mm-hmm. That it just it doesn't get mentioned. You notice that things might be challenging, or you can tell that something ain't quite right, but no one ever talks about it.
My dad would say we have sufficient for our needs, and I never knew what that meant, but
and she had enough, but
I guess, yeah.
But who knows where it's going or what you're doing with it, I guess. Right. So how did you learn about it? Like, where did you, like you said you were in this place where it wasn't really talked about. So I take it they didn't like sit you down and teach you how to invest 101 and stuff like that. Where did you learn about money?
I'd say, so I'm the fifth of six kids in my family, and all of us have a very similar yet different mindset to money now in our adult lives. And so when you're the fifth of six kids, you get to watch your older siblings make mistakes and do really great things too. So I asked some of my older siblings a lot about money and how they treat it and what they do. And I would take their advice, you know, in the ways that I felt like it was applicable to me. But my wife, Rachel, she's where I feel like a lot of our healthy mindsets and attitudes to money have stemmed from. So now, instead of feeling poorly about spending money, it's what are our priorities and what's important to us, and how does our budgeting of our money reflect that? So, for example, you know, if I had to go to the doctor before and I had to spend money on a prescription, I would feel bad.
Even though you're
taking care of yourself. So it was not a healthy mindset. Now what we did for this year, 2024, is we have a health savings account. Mm-hmm. We spent hours and hours and hours writing in an Excel sheet. Here's what we spent this last year on all of our health expenses, whether it's expected or unexpected. And let's budget for this month, for this year. So when we do have those things happen, it's a no-brainer.
You're comfortable with it, yeah.
Yeah, health is priority. Safety is priority. Yeah. You should never feel poorly about spending on that.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. How did you move from that place of like guilty spending to feeling comfortable? Because that can be challenging for a lot of people.
Yeah, honestly, I think just preparation. Like, to me, in the absence of knowledge or in the absence of anticipating something, we create our own dialogue. Mm-hmm. So like growing up, because I didn't really hear a whole lot about money, you know, they did the best that they could and I don't fault them for that. But when you don't know what the dialogue is, you create your own story. And so that association with my childhood in that money is, you know, when I'm older, I can't spend money on anything because if I do, something bad is going to happen. Mm. To realizing, you know, there's some pretty significant things that happen in adult life, like you get married and then if you want to have a kid, you have a kid and that kid is really expensive. Yeah. But are we going to feel poorly about childbirth? No, we're not going
buying
to
your kid food because it's money you're spending.
Yeah. We're going to plan for it. And because we plan for it, that those dollars have an assignment instead of everything feeling unexpected.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. You don't want to feel like you're spending everything out of guilt and stuff, but there is some, I guess, obligation and need to spend money. Like you got to realize at some point it has to be spent. Like there's no way around that. Unfortunately, you can't save every penny.
Yeah.
So you mentioned you're married. How do you guys manage money? Let's start at the beginning, because right before we started recording, you mentioned it's changed a lot how you guys talk and handle money. How was it when you guys first got married managing money?
So when we first got married, I think it was the conversations were kind of hard because we both come from very different backgrounds. I kind of explained that, you know, there was some unemployment that happened growing up and, you know, we were always provided for and super grateful for that. We never were hungry or anything like that. Rachel, my wife, her family went through a pretty serious drought of money, unemployment, and a home was foreclosed. Mm. And so she, you know, we both have or had kind of a scarcity mindset or a fear-based mindset with money. But as we talked about it more and we got really good at understanding where to put our money and how to budget it and what's reasonable and what's not, what's important, what's not, what can wait for goals and what needs to be happening now, our conversations were no longer fear-based. They were goal-based and optimistic about the future. So now when we talk about money, it's routine.
It's more fun.
Yeah, we know what our dreams are. We know what our ideas are. We know where we struggle and we know where we're getting better. So it's a lot better.
Yeah, I can see that, especially with Rebecca and I too. Like at the beginning, it was very interesting to see some of the like our initial beliefs with money come out, like with how our parents influenced the way her and I were talking about money. I'm sure you guys saw that too.
Unemployment
was probably a real thing. I know you guys moved all the way out here. I'm sure like that's a concern of like, what are we going to do once we get out there, and how do we
are we even going to like Utah?
Yeah, because you guys moved from the East Coast, so it was a long ways, and there was a lot of bumps right at the beginning with your stuff, but that's a whole different story.
Be careful with your moving company.
Yes, yeah, definitely. How do you involve your guys' families at all in financial decisions? Do you talk to your parents now about money?
I ask periodically for advice from my parents, and usually it's something that's low stakes. I can't really think of a specific example of what advice we would ask for. I think the most recent one is how we decided to allocate money to different goals. So we're trying to get our student loan debt down mm-hmm. so that there's no high interest rate loans, and we consider anything that's 5% or more mm-hmm. to be high in this case for us. And we're trying to save up for a down payment for a house and to buy a second car all at the same time. And so the most recent, you know, advice I went to my parents to was, what do you think of this? Is if we did a 40-40-20 savings approach. Mm. So, we have our basic expenses, which includes our student loan debt already, the basic minimum payment.
Yeah.
And then the surplus of money that we have is we spend 40% on loans, 40% on a down payment, and 20% towards a car. And I asked my dad what he thought, and he's like, that sounds like a great idea to prioritize all of your goals at once instead of just one. Because in our case, let's say if we put all our money towards student loans, we want to get it to net zero, which would be amazing.
Yeah, but then you can't move for a couple more years.
Then you can't move. And maybe we miss out on the opportunity for a house. And so.
Yeah. How did you guys decide to balance that? Because that could also be a tricky conversation, because I know for Rebecca and I, they're her student loans, and there's that weight on her because it's her education. So she wants to pay them off more than I do. Mm-hmm. How did you guys juggle that?
We tried to take the most logical approach, because whether anybody wants to admit it or not, there are feelings mm-hmm. attached to money. And sometimes with loans, sometimes it can be regret. Sometimes it can be frustration that we didn't mm-hmm. make a different decision before that. Sometimes it's just being mad at the system.
Yeah, definitely.
so we just kind of took the most logical approach, like, well, interest accrues on a monthly basis. Which of these loans are the highest interest rate loans between the two of us? Mm-hmm. And then it became irrelevant who's are getting paid off, because since we're a unit and because we do everything together, it's ours.
Yes.
It's ours. We're building our foundation. We're not getting rid of her problem or my problem or my debt or her debt. It's ours.
Yeah. Once you get to that point where you're combined on that decision, it's really powerful, because like you said, there's always emotion in any money decision, especially if you're continuing to separate it.
Yep.
You're both going to still have strong emotions. Yep. You can't work through that if you're separate. It's really interesting, but
be a team, but not.
Yeah. It's like be a team, but there is an I in team when you're like that, if you're separate like that. So how do you guys manage your budget now? So you've moved through a couple years of marriage and mm-hmm. you've talked about money. How do you guys sit down monthly? Do you do it yearly?
Yeah. So right now we sit down monthly, and we do that for a couple of reasons. So I've always loved music. Before I was an administrator, I was a music teacher, and I love piano. So I teach piano lessons now. And it's less about the money and more about just the enjoyment of it. Mm-hmm. But that coupled with a couple of random opportunities that come up with work to receive a stipend or additional mm-hmm. whatever, our monthly budget fluctuates slightly every month. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we do monthly budget meetings at the end of the prior month or right on the first day of the month. And our style of budgeting is zero-based budgeting. Yeah. So every dollar has an assignment. We have a spreadsheet that we use where we put, for example, for the month of March, we have our expected expenses that don't change ever.
Yeah.
Rent, car insurance, utilities, phone payment, utilities, all of that. And we highlight that into a certain color because that won't change any month. That's really easy just to copy and paste. And then sometimes there's some variation in food and fun and random expenses or a birthday or, a trip, because we still do fun stuff. Mm-hmm. We do it within reason and what's appropriate for our budget, but we still do fun stuff. Because if not, I feel like we would get fed up and then splurge.
Yeah. Yeah. and then you blow it all at once. You break all those goals and the emotions come right back up to the surface.
Exactly. So we do zero-based budgeting kind of in that style. In addition to that, we have sinking funds. Mm-hmm. So for car repair, for expected family vacations, like I have a family reunion or a wedding coming up this July that we saved money for. So when it comes to buy tickets, it's not 1 month, you're totally off in your goals. Instead, it just does minor alterations to several months, mm-hmm. which doesn't hurt nearly as bad. And then the other, I don't know if I mentioned Christmas, but we do that for Christmas too. We pick a number. This is how much we're going to spend this year. and then we can buy throughout the year and it's fine.
Yeah. You'd be surprised too how much easier it is to pick that number in February than it is in November.
than it is in November.
Because there's the pressure coming too of Christmas, but also you have to save so much more if you wait.
Yeah. So we do it for birthdays too.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Oh, the other thing that we do, we started doing this recently that helped us a lot. When we talk about money and you're in our stage where there's a lot of different goals all at once, you constantly are evolving your ideas. And it's really hard to remember what you talked about the month before.
Yes, it is.
And so we created, this is Rachel's doing because she's a genius. She created a new tab that talks about notes, last month's notes. Like when we decided we're going to do a 40-40-20 for our surplus, we wrote that down. And she even took a separate tab and put in a formula that goes, you know, here's the amount of loans we have. Here's our goal for a down payment. Here's our goal for a car payment. And stuff, and so we know what month we're expected to achieve that goal. We can hold ourselves accountable a little more. So that's kind of our style of budgeting. And even further, we try and do something called Fair Play in our family. There's actually a cool book and card sets where there's as equal of responsibilities in both the brainstorming and the execution in different areas of life. And so one of Rachel's responsibilities that she wanted to take on is to be money manager. So Rachel creates the budget, she creates a proposal, and then we look at it together to see if we should, you know, change anything. And then within those, within the realm of money, we're responsible for different things. Like I am responsible for bath time stuff or, you know, all things related to shower and the bathroom and kid stuff in the bath. Whereas Rachel is one of her things for money is when we host people. She really likes hosting. So she says, here's how many people or how many times I want to invite people over this month. Here's how much money we need for it. So that way it's a team effort and it's not all falling on one person.
Yeah. So you kind of like bring back your topics of that realm to your conversations. That's really interesting. I could see how that could be helpful because then it doesn't feel like Rachel's taking care of everything money, the whole household money wise, but you still get some input too, where you don't feel like maybe she's taking over, taking control and stuff like that. That can be a tricky balance. And one thing that I just thought was interesting is like you said Rachel's the money manager and she wants to take that on, but you're here still talking about what you do. Because so often I think people can say, oh, my husband takes care of the money and I don't worry about it. Or my wife takes care of it, I don't worry about it. But it's important you still know. And I guess that leads perfectly to my next question is how important do you think it is for you guys to talk about money?
Oh, it's super important. Again, like my biggest thought, and this is just a thought I have a lot as a leader in, you know, in a school or in community or whatever your role is when there is no information or the absence of information, stories are created in people's minds. So if we're not talking about money, I'm operating under assumptions. This is what I think is being done. And then unfairly so, it puts, you know, puts my spouse in a position where they're in a terrible position. I'm expecting them to tell me, but why can't I just say, hey, what are we doing this month? It's, you know, I work full time. Rachel builds her home and keeps her child alive. And she, and she also, she works part time from home online. And so we are both involved in money in different ways. I might be at home. I might be at work, you know, working full time. Rachel understands the needs of our home. Rachel's also receiving money and understands where that needs to be allocated for a lot of different reasons. I don't know how it's possible to not talk about money.
Seriously. Yeah. Like, cause if you're at work full time, or maybe you have a job that your work full time plus or something, like how do you know that it's okay that your other spouse that's at home is spending money on something if you're not talking about it? Cause then you just get the feeling of I'm making all the money, you just spend all of it. Where is it going? And then anger builds.
Well, and how do I know what needs we have around the house if I'm not there all the time during the day? Like I can see how things are when I come home for a couple of hours, but she lives in our house all day, every day. Right. And so she understands, hey, we need this supply. We need to do this. We need to grab this thing because Caleb is learning how to walk and we don't want him to hit his head on the corner. So we need this. Those are things that I wouldn't think of because I'm not there. And those conversations result in money.
Yeah, it always does. Like, yeah. money touches everything. Like, any little conversation you have. Yeah, like you said, I don't know how Rebecca and I would manage, even though we don't have any children. So, like, it's maybe a little easier for us to say, here's what we're doing with money and not make as many assumptions. But when, like, you're working and there's also a kid to take care of,
yep.
There's just so much that comes up, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I can't imagine not talking about money. It's a great place to yep. leave that one. Let's talk a little bit about emergency funds. Do you guys have an emergency fund?
We do. And we're actually very grateful for it, because just in December, we had a whole lot of car issues that we didn't expect that drained our car fund that we use for anticipated repairs and
smaller things
and stuff. A bit from our emergency fund. So we're using our tax refund that we're getting to replenish that. So what we have is 3.5 months of emergency fund, just general. Mm-hmm. It's a pool that we don't touch. We put it in a high interest rate savings account so that it accrues interest. Yeah. And then we have another fund, which is specifically for car. And we just have about $1,000 to $1,500. I can't remember what the exact number is there. So that when an oil change comes, or a flat tire, or you get a nail in your tire like we got this week.
Oh, man.
But we could patch it, so it was okay.
Yeah.
so again, it's something that you have to deal with immediately, because it's a safety issue. There's mm-hmm. no guilt, or there's no worry associated with, can we swing this? Is this going to hurt me in other areas? That's just kind of our non-negotiable. That's why we have an emergency savings fund. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried about not having a job. I'm very secure in my job. But how can you anticipate the unexpected?
Yeah, there's no way.
You know, like, I could get seriously hurt, or it could happen to Rachel, or it could happen to Caleb, or nothing could happen, right?
Yeah.
But because we have a couple of months of that emergency savings, it gives us peace of mind, and we don't touch it. In a way, it's not tempting at all to not touch it, is because it's in a separate fund. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I have that app on my phone, if I'm being honest.
It's just sitting there, because you can get it in a day or two.
I can get it easily. So yeah, that's kind of what we do with emergency funds, is we make sure we have at least 3 months, and then we replenish it as quickly as we can when stuff comes up.
Yeah. And one of the things I like to say is that emergency funds turn like small things into just slight inconveniences, because like imagine for a second that you guys didn't have any sort of this car fund or emergency fund, and you had your car troubles. Then it's bleeding into your ability to get to work. Then it's bleeding into your paycheck. Maybe you lose your job because you don't have an emergency fund. Now you really need the emergency fund.
Yes.
So like it builds and builds just because you get a flat tire, or your car doesn't start one morning and you need to go buy a $100 battery. Like,
your car is shaking when you go past 65 miles an hour. You should probably get it figured out.
Yeah, before it just falls apart on the freeway. Let's talk a little bit about retirement and like your long-term goals. You mentioned you guys have some shorter-term ones, saving for a house and saving up for other things, a car and the like. How do you guys approach retirement together? Because like the stage you're in, there's a lot of things pulling on your wallet. Yep. How do you even think about retirement in the long term?
So we actually went and saw a financial planner. I think it was mid-year last year, and we asked them several questions about what is the right timing for saving additional funds beyond the minimum, like what your employer gives you and what's automatically pulled out of your paycheck, because that's how mine works. It's automatically pulled out 10%, which is great. And then they contribute to it. Stuff, yeah. I asked them, I said, when is it appropriate for you to start contributing more aggressively to your 401k when you're competing with loans? Mm-hmm. And the advice that we were given is get rid of your high interest rate loans and then start to contribute slowly but surely to your 401k based on your annual raises or increases in your salary. So right now we're really close to being done with our high interest rate loans. So we're just doing the bare minimum to our 401k right now. This year we're going to open up a Roth IRA account for Rachel so that she can put we can put some money in there to max that out yearly while she's at home.
And
one day as we decide what to do, because we're going to grow our family, we just have one 11-month-old wild kid right now, but we intend on having more kids eventually. when returning to the workforce, will be able to very aggressively contribute to that 401k account in the future with anticipated raises in my field and competitive positions. But that's kind of what we do now is it's not by the wayside. We're highly aware of it, and I check it every month. But we're waiting to get rid of our high interest rate loans so then that we can comfortably contribute to the 401k without worrying about interest accruing more than we would like.
I think that comes back to, like what you were saying, comes back to our earlier conversation around just talking about it and being prepared, because it's very easy to just let your retirement fall and then suddenly you're 35, 40, 45 years old and you don't have anything saved for retirement, but all your loans are paid off and you're in a good place savings wise.
Good job. But,
but compound interest is such a big deal with retirement. Like it's what you really need. So awesome. This has been great. If there's anything you want to bring up, feel free. But I have one final question of what do you wish you would have known sooner that you know now about money?
Oh man. I feel like this is such a, like people our age thing to say, but I wish that there would have been, or I would have been more educated on the cost of college. You know, great opportunities. And I even went to a university that's way less expensive than other places. And I got my master's degree from a reliable and well sought after university that's also inexpensive. But I wish I would have understood better. Here's what it means when you sign up for this. Here's what interest means. Because when you're 18, you might not know.
You have no idea what you're doing.
But I wish I would have known more about that and the opportunities for scholarships to be able to fund the education. Because education is important. And, you know, it's a there's a return on investment, hopefully, for most people who do it. But I wish I would have known more about that.
Awesome. Well, there you have it. If you know someone going into college or you are going into college, learn a little bit more about what it costs going into it. But Luke, thank you so much for joining. That was a fun conversation.
Thanks for having me.
The money. Awesome. Thanks. So thank you again to Luke for coming on today's episode and for that interview here on Money Talk with Skyler Fleming. I want to reflect on a little bit of impact that I feel you could take away from today's episode. First, I want to start about the importance of reflecting on your childhood experiences. The early experiences that you have with money can really impact and shape how you handle money today. Like Luke said, it made him feel a little bit guilty when he spent money because of how he was brought up with money. He said that he would go buy a prescription and feel bad about it, even though he was taking care of himself. But thankfully, he's moved to a place where health and safety are number one, and if you have to spend money on that, that's okay. I would encourage you to reflect on your childhood upbringing with money and see how it influences how you spend or save money today. Do you spend or save money in an unhealthy manner because of how you were raised with money? That's something that once you realize it can be a huge, huge milestone to cross on your financial journey. Another thing that I think is huge is navigating money in relationships. Money touches everything in our lives. Are you talking about money in your marriage, with a friend? Well, if you aren't, a great place to start is with the Money Talking Points, which you can find at skylarfleming.com/resources. But talking about money can help you bridge the gap between emotions and logical thinking when it comes to money. This is a great plug for my recent episode with Bob Wheeler, where we talked about emotions and money talks and how you manage all of that. But actually talking about money is a huge step towards navigating those emotions properly and in a good, healthy way. I really hope you took away from today the importance of having an emergency fund. If you don't have one, get one. I can't encourage this enough. And you know, there's people out there who say you maybe don't need one, and maybe there's some financial point where you don't. But if you aren't sure if you're at that point, then you need an emergency fund, because I think you're going to really know if you're in a big, comfortable financial situation and don't really need one. And even then, you're going to be in a situation where you have money in the backup that is essentially acting like an emergency fund. So really, we all need one. If you're not sure if you need one, play out a scenario that could be considered an emergency. How much money do you need for that to make it not an emergency? An easy one to pull from the interview when I was talking with Luke is a flat tire. Is a flat tire going to turn into this big problem where you're not able to get to work? Are you going to lose your job over this one flat tire? Do you need to make sure you have enough money saved up to lose your job if you get that flat tire? Why not just avoid the flat tire in the first place and make sure your car's maintained and things like that with some sinking funds and emergency funds? So make sure you have that money in the bank ready to be used and deployed when you need to. How is your mindset? Let's use this as a check-in point. How's your mindset when it comes to money? Like Luke said in the beginning, his mindset was around feeling guilty when he spent money, but now it's moved to a place where he can comfortably spend money on the necessities. How's your mindset with money doing? Do you feel bad about spending? Do you feel bad about savings?
Do you maybe feel too good about saving money and you're not enjoying your life? There's a lot of different ways we can look at it and a lot of unhealthy mindsets and healthy mindsets. So that's why it's important that we're talking about money so that we can make sure we have a good, healthy mindset and that we're bouncing ideas off of each other so that we can grow and continue to learn together. But let's talk about the money talking points next. The first money talking point that we're going to talk about is, how did your childhood experiences with money influence how you handle it now? For me, it's that I always wanted to make sure that my car was able to be filled fully. I noticed that as a kid, maybe we'd only put a certain amount of money in the car. Maybe we wouldn't quite fill it every single time because I don't know if we could or couldn't or if it was just a decision being made. But I knew for me that it was important to always make sure that I had enough money that I could get a full tank of gas and get where I needed to when I needed to fill up the car. I wanted to make sure that I had a comfortable savings, and I also don't really like asking people for money. Those both are things that I think come directly from my childhood. I'm not first and initially going to ask people for money when I need help. I'm going to figure out how I can make the money that I need or how I can make my savings and spending work to pay for what I want to pay for. So how does your childhood upbringing influence how you handle money now? A great question to discuss, and you can honestly learn a lot from someone just with this one question. The second money talking point is, do you have an emergency fund? The answer for me and my wife is yes. It's completely yes. We love having our emergency fund. It's very helpful. Like I said, with the flat tire story, that's something we've faced too. Had a flat tire. Thankfully, it was able to be repaired. But if you don't have an emergency fund, that can blow up and become a huge issue and really, really stressful. But you can avoid it all with a simple emergency fund. The third money talking point is, why do you think it's important to talk about money? I don't know how people cannot talk about money. One, I love talking about it, but two, it's so important. It's something we have to learn about, something we need to do good at, and it's so easy. You just ask simple questions, open-ended questions, get that conversation going, listen to great podcasts, and share them with your friends, and then we all get talking about money, and we all do better with money together. But thank you for listening to this episode. Let's wrap it up next. So thank you for listening to today's episode. We've traversed the landscape of personal finance, the impact of childhood experiences on money, talking about money in a marriage, and a whole bunch of things regarding mindset and changing your mindset when it comes to money. Thanks to Luke for coming on today's episode, and his journey really helped show all those things that really go into changing our view on money and doing better with money. If you have any feedback or questions about this week's episode, please reach out. I would love to talk about money with anyone who's listening, and I'd love to get connected with more people who are listening. I feel like these episodes that we've been having with everyday guests are great, and they're really coming out with some awesome stories. So if you want to come on the podcast or know anyone who would like to come on the podcast or would be a good guest to share their money story, please let me know. Either a comment on YouTube, social media, or an email would be great, and I'd be happy to reach out and help set up an episode with them. I really enjoy being able to hear everyday stories about how people handle their money so that we can all do better with money together. Be sure to head over to YouTube or any podcast player and subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. But thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.